Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, as always, sitting next to Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, Packers-Falcons Week 2 Sunday Night Football at the brand-new Mercedes-Benz Stadium? Dome? Stadium. Okay. It is a dome, though.
It is still a dome, yeah. Okay. But they have that deal going on now, I think, where it has the retractable roof.
That's right, the bells and whistles
these new stadiums are getting.
Okay, so we'll see exactly what it looks like when we get down there. But the big matchup is one day closer. And a big topic of conversation in the Packers locker room this week, you wrote about it for us on our website. The Packers wasted no time in 2017 taking advantage of a free play for a big play in the game against Seattle. When you try to break this down, you know, whether it's an offside or a 12-man on the field situation, there's a lot of concentration, a lot of orchestration that goes into this. The Packers don't just do this and execute this on a whim. It's something that they work at, and they've worked at it for a number of years now.
Well, and the impressive thing is, Mike, is that the Packers have been able to perfect this, and very rarely do you see them, you know, not be set in a legal formation. And that's probably the thing that stands out to me the most, because this week, you know, we've written stories and we've talked in the past about free plays and 12 men on the field and defensive offsides and the ways that Aaron Rodgers can really capitalize on that. But this week, we kind of got a better glimpse into what the psychology is of it, what the anatomy is of that play. Jordy Nelson, you know, kind of tuned us in a little bit even after the game on Sunday against the Seahawks, in that it's a one word that Aaron Rodgers says. Everybody knows what to do. It's not really a set play, so to speak, but everybody makes sure they're in a legal formation, and then from there it's up to Corey Linsley and Aaron Rodgers to execute. Nobody in the NFL does it better than the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. There's a number of different stats you can go out and find, but if you go back, I think at least over the last 4 years, I think it's something like they have twice as many 12 men on the field penalties as any other team in the league. It's pretty impressive what they've been able to do there.
Yeah, when you look at it from in its most basic form, offensive rhythm, offensive substitution, whatever, the way it normally goes, the offense gets in its personnel, the defense can substitute, get in its personnel. The play is called, you go up and run the play. Well, when you think about how much stuff Aaron Rodgers is paying attention to, he's not just waiting for the play call from Mike McCarthy. If the Packers aren't substituting, the defense doesn't have a right to substitute.
Right.
There isn't necessarily a concession that they get to switch players. So then Rodgers is watching if they're going to be substituting. He's keeping an eye on that. He's probably also getting a play call in his ear in case they're going to run something normally. But he's processing all this in real time. And as you said, when it looks like they might be able to catch them in the middle of a substitution and have an extra guy on the field, he calls out the secret code word, whatever it is, which presumably changes every week.
Yeah.
So that the word doesn't get around as to exactly what it is. And as you said, it's not necessarily a set play, but the Packers receivers, they have certain areas of the field they're assigned to run to, and then Rodgers is looking for whoever has the best matchup and the best chance to take advantage of something, and it doesn't always work. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, but when it's a 7-6 game and you get a 32-yard touchdown in the second half off of a free play like that, those are big plays in football games when they do work.
Yeah, and as you said, Mike, it doesn't always work, but probably the thing that stands out to me the most is never do you find the Packers in a situation where the guy actually gets off the field and Rodgers starts the play, and then suddenly they're forced to run a rush play without the benefit of the flag. If something like that happens, Rodgers also has enough awareness to pull things back, regroup, and reset things. So that's something that really does, I think, speak to his awareness and just the overall command of the football field. On that particular play, though, Mike, a 32-yard touchdown to Jordy Nelson. It was one of three free plays that the Packers had in the second half of that victory.
Yeah.
The thing that really came together on that specific play is Nelson lines up in the slot, kind of in the semi-bunch formation off the right side of the line, gets matched up against Bobby Wagner, and kind of finds a quick little seam through both Wagner and then over the top with Earl Thomas's coverage, comes free. Rodgers, as you talked about earlier this week, some people thought he might have been looking off the coverage. In fact, he was just making sure that the flag was down. Once he did see the flag was down, throws a picture-perfect pass to Jordy Nelson. And how many times, Mike, over the last 5-6 years have we seen those two get together on that specific play for what really is a game-changing type moment in the course of a football game?
Yeah, it's a credit to Rodgers for how he can orchestrate everything, a credit to the rest of the offense for their discipline and their speed speedy reaction to what's going on. I actually think in a lot of ways those offside type of free plays take even more discipline from the offense, because when that defensive guy jumps into the neutral zone, if anybody from the offense jumps, they're supposed to blow the play dead. You don't get the shot at the free play. But if everybody stays disciplined on offense, and then that snap comes while the guy is in the neutral zone before he has a chance to go back, and that's a credit to Corey Linsley for being able to watch that and see that, that's when you get a shot at it. This one happened to be a 12-man free play for a touchdown, but we've seen the Packers take advantage of the offside type of free plays as well.
Yeah, they have, and they got two big 5-yard plays out of that. I think both of them were on Michael Bennett, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you might be right.
Against the Seahawks, one of which actually converted a first down. The other one took a second and long situation and made it more manageable. So Jordy Nelson said that's where it starts. That, you know, if they can get that, that's what they're going for. And then if you can extend a big play off of that, that's why the 12 men on the field penalty works so well, though, is because you don't need to have that concession in terms of being able to stay, you know, set in your fundamentals and staying in your stance at the offensive line. You can go, you can make the play happen. And as it turned out against the Seahawks, really probably the defining touchdown of that contest.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. Wes, yesterday we talked briefly about a Packers undrafted rookie from a year ago who made his first little splash in the NFL in Atlanta, and that was receiver Geronimo Allison. Well, there's another undrafted rookie from that 2016 class who put himself on the map, so to speak, with Packers fans in that regular season game in Atlanta last year, and that's safety Kentrell Bryce. It's a play that I don't think anybody's going to forget for a long time. Second half, a check down pass in the red zone to a running back, Teron Ward, for the Falcons. Looks like he's headed right for the pylon to run in for a touchdown. Kentrell Bryce comes over there and just stands him up. I mean, it was a whopper of a collision. Kentrell Bryce won the battle. The ball was stopped on the 1 yard line. And, you know, I talked with HaHa Clinton Dix in the locker room the other day. That was a play that that made an impression on his teammates, and especially for an undrafted guy and a rookie, you know, trying to make his way here in the NFL.
It was a great story that you wrote both on him and Geronimo Allison, and them making the second year jump after really promising undrafted rookie seasons. But the thing that stands out to me the most about Bryce, and you talked about it a little bit, is how much he looks like he just belonged from the beginning. You know, he says he's playing more free this year. There's more confidence. There's more comfort in the defense. But that was a big spot he was thrown in last year, because Micah Hyde ends up playing the slot a lot for the Packers in 2016. So they didn't really maybe have the depth at safety that they thought initially, that they, you know, they were going to be in a situation where they had to play an undrafted rookie 286 snaps or whatever it was that Bryce played. But I think between that game and then the Dallas game later in the season, you started to see a young man. We knew he could hit.
Yeah.
But to have the composure to play the way he did on the road, in some ways, and it's very different because there were two different positions, but in some ways it kind of reminds you a little bit of Sam Shields, of a guy that's thrown into a spot and has to step up because in a lot of ways there wasn't another guy there. And Bryce, his overall rookie season, I wrote about it a lot during the offseason. When I went back and watched those games, when I watched his film, he was an impressive guy. And now, as it turns out, in that game against the Seahawks, he plays nearly every snap.
Yeah, he's out there against Seattle for the vast majority of plays because the Packers were playing that three safety nitro package most of the way. When I look back to his rookie season, in addition to the hit on Ward at the goal line in Atlanta, there was the big hit on Cole Beasley over the middle in the Dallas playoff game. He really had to step up in that Dallas playoff game because Morgan Burnett exited with an injury. And I remember talking to Bryce about that Dallas game afterwards. And as much as he heard from, you know, friends and former teammates and all that kind of stuff about the big hit on Beasley, the one that stuck with him was he felt he should have had an interception in the end zone on a deep ball over the middle, got his hands on it, couldn't quite bring it in as he was falling backwards. And that's the type of play that stuck with him because he feels like those are the types of plays he needs to make now to take his game to another level. I believe he had an interception in the preseason this year, if I'm not mistaken, at Washington. So we're really seeing the evolution of a young talent, and kudos to him for the work he's put in and to the Packers personnel staff for finding this undrafted guy out of Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, and one of the things he did this offseason, as you touched on, was working with Ryan Clark, former, whatever it was, 9-10 years he played in the league.
Yeah, he played about a decade in the league,
With Pittsburgh and a number of other spots, kind of going out of his way to find ways to sort of improve his game, expand his game. And I think it's shown so far in the early going. There was an interesting article, that I think it was MMQB's Andy Benoit mentioned, and it was such a good observation when you look specifically at the Packers' dime package. What they are able to do with having the three safeties on the field in those situations is it allows them to play kind of a Tampa 2 sort of cover over the top, cover 2, 2 shell, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But then it gives them an opportunity to have Morgan Burnett in that rover-type position instead of a linebacker. I think, honestly, when it comes down to the pass coverage, that's been the biggest difference. And they aren't sacrificing. As good as Burnett is and as accountable as he is on the back end, they don't seem to be sacrificing a lot when Bryce goes in there. That's a testament to him that they're able to still be able to keep that as one of their stronger packages, despite the fact that they're taking a 7-year veteran out of his natural position.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy talked about Bryce's communication skills in the back end, how he's been much more vocal, much more forceful in his second year. He saw it stand out in the spring, just his overall command of the defense. He's generated a ton of confidence in the coaching staff in being able to put him back there on a regular basis, which allows the flexibility with Morgan Burnett. Now, to me, moving forward, I think the Packers are going to see teams try to ram the ball down their throats, essentially, to get them out of that nitro package. Because it's essentially a light six-man box with nickel coverage. It's a light six-man box with one of your inside linebackers being a safety. There are teams that are going to try to take advantage of that lighter box and try to run the Packers out of it and make them go to another personnel group on defense. That's all part of the chess match that's going to evolve from week to week here in the NFL. But the early returns on the nitro package, it's doing what the Packers want it to do.
Absolutely. And again, Morgan Burnett, being as solid of a run defender as he is, he's able to make up for some of those size, deficiencies that he has compared to a 240-pound, linebacker like Jake Ryan. So, again, it's 1 week. There's a long way to go, but if I'm Dom Capers, I have to like what I saw coming out of week one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But with that, Wes, we're going to throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz over there. And Wes, the Packers are dealing with some shuffling around, some injury concerns, a little bit of uncertainty on both the offensive and defensive lines here heading into week two. Let's start on the offensive side. Brian Bulaga misses last week's game with an ankle injury, then actually ends up missing practice on Wednesday. He's sent home with an illness. So not exactly sure what the update is there on his situation at right tackle with the ankle. But then starting left tackle, David Bakhtiari is listed as a limited participant in practice on Wednesday due to a hamstring injury. And then you have backup offensive tackle Jason Spriggs is going to be out at least a couple of weeks, according to Mike McCarthy, with a hamstring injury. So you have Kyle Murphy, who started at right tackle for Bulaga, and now you've also signed Adam Pankey, an undrafted rookie offensive tackle from your own practice squad, just to try to cover your bases here. But the Packers are dealing with a lot of moving parts, I guess you might say, just right here early in the season.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, Don Barkley currently on injured reserve, too, with the potential of returning later this season as the designee. So
that's right.
That has them down, two of their top rotating offensive linemen on the reserves, and then in addition to not knowing what's going on with Bakhtiari or Bulaga. So a tough spot for them to be in. The one thing I think they have to take some solace in is the fact, and as we talked about earlier this week, Kyle Murphy able to battle the way he did. Now the question is, depending on what happens with Bakhtiari, how versatile is Murphy? Does he have that flexibility to play left tackle if they need him to? Pankey, did it at West Virginia. He was actually I think we had spent 1 year together with Don Barkley, if I remember correctly, as a redshirt freshman.
Oh, wow, okay.
I believe so. So he has some flexibility there, too. They worked him at guard. They worked him at tackle. Big kid, 6'5", 304 pounds, something like that. And the Packers were really high on him coming out of that undrafted class. So a tough situation for them to be in. But again, as McCarthy said before, they like to take the whole week with these guys, give them a chance to rehab, see exactly where Bakhtiari is, and then they'll have to make the game plan from there of how they want to approach this thing.
Yeah, and the roster moves being made here to make sure that you know, the Packers have enough reinforcements at offensive tackle should they need it, it's led to the release of Ricky Jean-Francois on the defensive line, free agent they brought in the offseason. And then, as we had talked about before, Ladarius Gunter at cornerback was released with Geronimo Allison being put on the roster after his suspension. But now with Jean-Francois gone from the defensive line, he didn't play a whole lot against Seattle. But that's also an indication that Quentin Dial, who was picked up at the end of training camp heading into week one, perhaps he's ready to now step in. And also third-round pick, the rookie out of Auburn, Montrevious Adams, hasn't been a full participant in practice yet, so let's not jump the gun here, but certainly showing some signs that maybe he's going to be back in a little while here as well.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, one, I think I finally figured out how to say Ricky Jean-Francois' name after butchering it for most of the offseason, and now he's gone.
But yeah, me too.
You could hear in Mike McCarthy's voice, Packers don't, and they don't relish the opportunity of cutting players. That isn't a big thing in their day, but you could tell in his voice how much it pained them to let go of him, let go of Ladarius Gunter. Those are guys they valued. It wasn't that they just played themselves off the roster. They had to make tough calls with Allison coming back and having to fortify the offensive line. That being said, you have to press on, and Quentin Dial's a part of that. Had a week to get up to date on the system. You also have Montrevious Adams working his way back from that foot injury. So Packers, you look at the defensive line, the lines have blurred, as we've talked about. So, you know, where's Ahmad Brooks at with his concussion in the protocol?
Right.
He plays inside in the dime package now, as we saw. So while there's only typically one or two of those defensive linemen on the field at a given time, you potentially might need to get those four and five guys involved, depending on how those packages work out.
Yeah, and you want to get to a spot as well where you're not necessarily asking Mike Daniels to play 85 or 90% of the snaps and whatnot. This is a long season. Mike Daniels is as much promise as Kenny Clark has and Dean Lowry and these other guys. Mike Daniels is you know, the crux of that defensive line, and you're going to need the Mike Daniels that we saw perform in week one against Seattle. You want to see that in December and January as well. So part of it is going to be making sure as nonstop a motor as he has to manage his snaps and be able to have some kind of a rotation with capable reserves rotating in.
Yeah, that gas tank runs pretty deep on Mike Diesel, but that being said, we're only human, so
right.
You want to be able to keep him fresh.
Yeah, all right. Well, with that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford sitting alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, you were part of a small group of reporters around Jordy Nelson's locker for a rather extended period of time on Wednesday. And he went into some detail on a topic that he didn't provide a whole lot of insight into last January intentionally because of everything that was going on at the time. But I'm talking about the comeback from the broken ribs and getting out there in Atlanta in the Georgia Dome for the NFC title game with that injury that he was dealing with. Give us a little bit of a rundown of what you learned and kind of what he shared that maybe he wasn't quite so comfortable talking about 8 months ago.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Jordy Nelson's not the kind of guy that likes talking about himself specifically when it revolves around injuries or playing through things. But he did kind of shed some light on what he dealt with last year, or I should say in January in Atlanta. And it wasn't like this big heroic, like, well, the night before the game, I couldn't breathe or anything like that. But it was interesting to hear exactly what the process is like of playing with broken ribs. And he mentioned the week earlier, you know, 7 days out, the doctors told him, you know, you're going to be feeling a lot of pain after he took that hit against the Giants in the wild card playoffs. And he remembers even saying when he was in Dallas the following week for the playoff game, he couldn't lay down on his back without it causing him a lot of problems, and it was an issue for him getting back up. But he did say when it came to 7 days, almost to the second, I believe he said, he felt good again. And he debunked a lot of the myths. He said there was no Kevlar jacket. There wasn't no bulletproof, you know, deal or anything like that. All it was is Red Batting Equipment Department kind of putting together this flak jacket that like a lot of the, you know, quarterbacks will wear to protect their ribs. And ultimately, he didn't feel any pain, and he didn't take any hits on the ribs. So that was a big thing for him as well. If he had, then we might be having a different conversation in terms of him playing with pain. Aaron Rodgers called it heroic. Aaron Rodgers or Jordy Nelson didn't quite see it that way.
Yeah.
But still, his ability and his willingness to get out there, I think, said a lot about him and what ended up being the NFL's comeback player of the year season.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a lot in the offseason. I couldn't have been more impressed with his dedication and desire to get out there in the NFC title game and play with those broken ribs, however they were protected. You know, you're only protected so much in a game that can be as vicious and as violent as NFL football. But it's interesting now, you know, even just looking back at the Seattle game in week one, we saw a little bit more of what Nelson liked to do a lot last year as well, which a reflection of his awareness of the defense and where everybody is around him. He will make catches and get down to avoid big hits, you know, coming across the middle or whether it's in the end zone. He has like a sixth sense now and really does a heck of a job, I think, at protecting himself. Rodgers puts the ball in the right spot for him to be able to do that, but then also his timing, his awareness and everything, he protects himself.
Yeah, and the thing that's going to be interesting about this game against the Falcons specifically, Mike, you have a healthy Jordy Nelson, a healthy Randall Cobb, and a healthy Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams, in theory, won't be lining up in the backfield like he was on a few plays last season.
Right.
That goes so far. So having those three guys healthy, and obviously Nelson looking long-term over the course of the season, trying to stay healthy, I think is going to be really critical for this receiving core.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But we've got to call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.